Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, happy Valentine's Day, everybody. Your Ben Jarofsky Show for this Wednesday, February 14th, starts now. On today's show, sweetheart journalist Monroe Anderson joins us once again for another edition of Monroe Wednesdays. They're talking top stories, talking Trump, talking a little bit of personal business. It's all going to be stuff that you're going to want to hear, so stick around. It's coming up. The Ben Jarofsky Show, a presentation of the Chicago Reader, chicagoreader.com for everything there is to know in the city of Chicago. If you want to know what to do, where to go, what to eat, what to drink, you want to know what's happening in politics, you want to know what big art events are coming up around the city, you might want to head to chicagoreader.com. Oh, and while you're there, sign up for that newsletter. You want to get the best stories sent straight to your email. And if you want more Ben Jarofsky stories, head to chicagoreader.com/Jarofsky. That's J-O-R-A-V as in victory, S-K-Y.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this In Memory of Joyce Wednesday, and here's why. So I'm looking at my dear friend Monroe Anderson. We're about to take the deep dive, but it's sad news, to put it mildly. On Saturday, Monroe's wife, Joyce Owens, passed away, and she'd been sick for a while. Let Monroe tell the story. So I obviously did not know Joyce as well as Monroe. I'm smiling when I say that. But I've gotten to know Joyce pretty good over the years. And truly a brilliant artist, absolutely brilliant artist. Go to Monroe and Joyce's house to see her paintings and sculpture all over the place and blow my mind. I'm just so bad at art, Monroe. I can't draw. I can't replicate the things I see. I can't replicate them. You give me a pen, and I just cannot replicate the vision on paper. And like what Joyce could do, just blew me. She's really the only great artist I knew. I've known in my life, and I was just always stunned by her talent. She was also one of the. She was born and raised in Philly. We'll get into this, Monroe, a little bit, and she reminded me so many ways of my mother. And I'll explain what I mean, Monroe. My mother's a Philly girl, born and raised, totally different generation, at least, I don't know, 30 years, maybe 25 years older than Joyce. Anyway, the point is, they had this Philly attitude. There's an attitude in Philly. It's kind of like general skepticism that's mixed with a satirical, sarcastic humor. And Joyce had that in abundance. We would talk politics, and she loved talking politics. And one of my regrets at being a podcaster is I could never talk Joyce into coming on the mic, because she always had something to say when we were off mic. When I call the house to talk to Monroe, Joyce would answer the phone, and then it'd be like a half hour of Monroe. And sometimes at the end, she'd go, "Oh, by the way, Monroe's not even here." You'd be like, "Monroe's not even here." But it would be like her political observations. "And this is what you should say. And this is what Monroe should say." And I'd be like, "Why don't you come on the show and say it?" "No, I'm busy. I don't want to." "But you say it." So anyway, those are just a handful of thoughts I have, Monroe, as I think about the life of the great Joyce Owens. Why don't you share some of your thoughts? The mic is yours.
Joyce was an incredible artist, as you point out. She has six paintings hanging in the official residence of UN Ambassador Linda Thomas Greenfield right now. She is featured in is one of the artists in a book about the Yale Art School. She also at one point was writing a podcast, blog, but she was sharing her ideas there. She was physically beautiful, also very beautiful woman, 5'10", incredible smile, and people are. I posted her obituary from the Sun Times on Facebook, and I've gotten hundreds of comments. And one of the things people talk about most, besides her talent, was what a sharing and compassionate woman she was.
Yeah, we come over, and she'd be like offering me the art. And I said, no, I cannot take this painting. It's too valuable. She goes, no, you can have it. And I was like, no, I can't do it. But she was very sharing in that regard. And and she's also, let's point out, she's the mother of your two children.
Yes, Scott and Kyle.
Yeah, Scott and Kyle. And it was a, she was ill for quite a while. You know, it was tough. I know it was really tough on you, Monroe, these last few months. So my heart goes out to you.
Yeah, well, actually, she was possibly an undeclared victim of the pandemic. It was not, you know, there's no diagnosis of it or anything, but when the pandemic first started, we stayed at home. We stayed in place. I mean, for a full year, we did not go outside in any place except to take out the garbage. We had all our food delivered by Instacart. No one visited us. We didn't visit anyone. And Joyce was a very social human being. And she loved people. She loved to meet people. She loved to talk to people. Rod Joy, who used to be the director of the Illinois Arts Alliance, once said that Joyce could talk to anybody at any time.
Yeah.
And this was true. And so for a year, she was pretty much fully deprived of socializing with people. I mean, she talked on the telephone, but that's not the same. During that time, she started growing increasingly paranoid. We live on a corner, so we have a southern exposure and with lots of windows. And she started closing the blinds at night, because she thought, as she put it, she felt like she was in the spotlight. This was more than a year ago, this started. And then she wanted the burglar alarm on the house. We live in a three-story house. When we were on the third floor, she wanted the burglar alarm on the burglar alarm was on the second floor, and there's an entrance there for fear that someone would come into the house. After the pandemic got to a point where it was okay to go out, but you just needed to be masked if you had shots. We had the vaccinations. She was worried because of the news. She was worried about my being carjacked or mugged when I went out to buy groceries. And she still remained in. And when she took out the garbage, she would wear a mask outdoors with little chance of bumping into anyone. And it just got progressively worse as time went by, to where last summer she started having these hallucinations. Let me point out the situation. She was early Alzheimer's at the time, which I would tell her. I mean, I would tell her I suspected that she had early Alzheimer's and she should go see a doctor. And she wanted to, she pointed out to me that she didn't see any medical degrees on my wall.
It's so Joyce right there.
That's that South Philly stuff going on.
Right.
Yeah.
And therefore, she dismissed, she was in denial. She dismissed the idea that she might have it.
Yeah.
And my mother had had it. So I had some idea of what the beginnings looked and sounded like. Anyway, then maybe 9 or 10 months ago, she started having these ongoing hallucinations that our house was going to burn down and that we needed to get out of it so we didn't burn up in the fire. To show you how incredible her mind was, even in her hallucination and paranoia, she once said to me, maybe this comes from when I was a little girl, my house burned down. And so that's why I'm afraid of this. But she continued with the hallucination. What she do was like Groundhog Day. Every morning, she would go down to the first floor and ring the doorbell, just lay on the doorbell. And I was supposed to come down so we could leave before we got burned up. In the meantime, she had loaded up the car with stuff, with bags of stuff to take that would that we'd need because we were leaving the house. And it was a hodgepodge of things. One time she put my rollerblades in a bag to go. And I haven't rollerbladed in 20 years. And it would be some clothes of hers and some clothes of mine. Some of her art. One time there was a roll of tall kitchen bags, store-bought tall kitchen bags. And it was just a mixture. And she was putting them in the car. And so I had to take them out for fear that someone would break into the car thinking that it was something really valuable in there or not. So she put it in, I take it out.
Yeah, I a couple things you said that really popped into my head. One has to do with the impact of the pandemic, which I think has been overlooked to a large degree. The pandemic was politicized so early on into the pandemic. I feel there's almost a reluctance to talk about it from either side, because either side being MAGA and the Democrats, because neither one wants to alienate too many voters. Well, probably MAGA. We'll talk about it more than the Democrats. I think you're absolutely correct. I think the isolation of the pandemic and the impact that had on people like Joyce has never really been adequately studied. And so I could see how someone as social as Joyce, it would be devastating to be locked away in that regards, you know? And that's one point.
Yeah. You know, and even when she got up enough nerve to go out, we go to restaurants and we'd be sitting at a table and the people over at the next table would say something she found interesting.
Yeah,
she tried a way to get into their conversation and engage them. And before it was over, four times out of five, they had invited her to join their table. And she would sit there talking to them and regaling them with how to raise children or how to do this or how to do that. And they would be laughing, and I would be sitting at our table. Eating much by myself watching her over at the other table.
No, I'm telling you, Joyce was a social creature. I'd come over to Monroe's house, and it would be like being on a cup show or something. Cup show, man, that's an ancient reference. Nobody knows what I'm talking about. I think Monroe knows what I'm talking about. And the thing about cup show is that the way he presented his show, every topic was on the table. So, you know, you could talk sports, art, culture, politics, foreign affairs, what have you. And that's how it was with Joyce. You know what I'm saying? It would be like, we'd start off talking about a painting, which would remind her of something else. And we go here, we go there. Then we get into the school. She had a lot of ideas about schools and schooling and education and the magnet schools. And she knew every principal in the city. And
her philosophy was that everybody ought to be educated. If they were educated, whatever fault or shortcoming they had, that would repair it. An education, a good school education would repair it.
Yeah.
Of course, she taught at Chicago State University for 20 some years. But when she first graduated from Yale, she couldn't get a teaching job. Mm-hmm. At a college, which is what she wanted to do. So she was assigned, she was in Philadelphia, and she was assigned this school for disturbed children. And she handled it so well. They told her that she was a natural born teacher, and they wanted her to come back for another year. And she didn't say to them, but she thought, why would I want to do this for another year? Because it was so challenging.
Yeah.
And plus, she's an artist. So she said, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah. No, she wanted to get back to her artwork. Yes. And that thing you said about, I'm going to get into something else about Joyce that I really want to talk about. But that thing you said about having moments, even when she was really sick, of clarity, so true. Both of my parents had dementia. And they would have moments of clarity. It would catch me off guard because I'd gotten used to them being out of it. And it's like, wow, there's the old person that exists still in this body, you know, Monroe. And it's
yeah, my mother had Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
So Joyce and I went to visit her in the nursing home. And we were talking to her, and she was talking about my father had left her and he had a family in Indianapolis. And the thing is, this was in 2004, and my father died in 1984. So, and he was a great father and husband. So, I mean, that wasn't even a possibility of that happening. But yeah, she was going on with it. But then she stops and she looks at Joyce and she says, "He's dead, isn't he?" And Joyce nodded.
Mm-hmm.
And she looked very sad, you know.
Yeah. So the other thing about Joyce, you should know, ladies and gentlemen, she was a proud Black woman, and so much of her artwork had African-American themes to it. And this quote, Monroe sent me this article about Joyce, was so Joyce. I'm going to read this quote to you, Monroe. I don't know if you know when I'm going to read, but this is classic Joyce, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
The honesty embedded in this alone is just, that's how she was. Here we go. So here's the article. In the midst of our national conversation about race, Joyce Owens offered her mother's opinion. Quote, "The only thing my mother regretted was that she was so light-skinned. People thought she was white. She married two darker-skinned men so her children would be darker." End of quotes. As an artist,
Joyce wasn't one of them. Joyce was as light-skinned as her mother.
It didn't work.
Right, exactly. Right. But Joyce didn't realize it. She had no. She, Joyce never fully recognized how beautiful she was, physically beautiful she was, and she didn't realize that how light she was, how light skinned she was. But I had when I first started dating her, I had this black architect. I was getting him to design some back stairs for the house, and she was here working on a painting, and he saw her. And he told a friend of ours that I was dating this white woman who painted black men, who liked to paint black men.
Oh, my God. Did you tell Joyce that story?
Yeah. And she was puzzled by it. You know, it was, you know, but at when she worked at BBM TV for 4 years. No, more than that. Maybe 6 years or something. But anyway, she worked there, and people there would ask her, where was she from? As in another country. She'd say Philadelphia. They looked puzzled. They figure out, well, what more than that? Then she realized they were trying to figure out her nationality.
Yeah. That is such a, oh my goodness. That moment where people are trying to figure things out, those little brains are going to work. You know, I just, like people look at someone and they, like, okay, what are you? You know what I mean? Monroe, I didn't really realize this till I came to Chicago. Like, this is very Chicago. What are you? Right. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I got to decide whether I like you or not. So what are you?
And exactly. Whether you're acceptable to me.
Yeah. Right? Man, you are weird, Chicago. You are so weird. Anyway, but yeah, what are you? And like, you look at Joyce and like, what are you? Puerto Rican? Huh? Dominican? What are you? You know?
She looked like her mother, Joyce did.
Okay.
And they were in New York one time. I think her mother was singing at a church. Anyway, they're walking down the street and they're in Harlem. And somebody says, those are the biggest Chinese I ever seen.
Damn. Oh, Lord.
Their mother was maybe 5'8". Joyce was 5'10".
There's so much prejudice embedded in that one sentence. I don't know where to start. I don't even know where to start. I say, all right, Chicago, you're redeemed. That happened in New York, so everybody's dumb. Not just Chicago. Yeah, I guess that's just a across the board. Woo! Where are you from? Who are you? What kind of person are you? I have to figure out whether I like you or not. Joyce, we get a kick out of this conversation. That is for sure. So Monroe, we'll transition to politics because I know you want to have that conversation, and Joyce would definitely want us to transition.
If she was sitting by me,
yes,
she would be passing me notes. Probably saying that's enough about me. And then when we actually started talking, telling me what she thought I should enter into our conversation, what topic or how should I express it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly true. Exactly true, ladies and gentlemen. And then I'd be like, Joyce, come on to the show. No. What? A Joyce memory, and a memory of another dear friend who passed. I think it was 4th of July at Monroe's house. I forget how many years ago. It was a while back. Joyce and Sergio Mims. And I don't know if you remember this night, Monroe. You were cooking. So you may have missed a lot of the conversation because you were...
And you guys were out on the deck.
Yes.
On the deck.
Yeah. And I think your son was there as well. One of your sons was there, Kyle. And what a night, man. Those two, they had to gift the gab. And it was like, it's like fighting to get a word in, man. Wait, let me talk. Now, Sergio had no problem coming on a mic, okay, as we all know.
Right. sometimes he was on the mic and on the keyboard at the same time.
As Dr. D likes to point out, the only guest on the Ben Jarofsky show who would engage with the live streamers while on the show. I remember that night, man. The politics was flying. It was great political conversation. So you know, Joyce Owens. I could never convince you to come on the show, Joyce, but your presence was definitely felt passing those notes to Marone.
And she hated Trump.
Yes. Hated Trump. Hated Trump.
Yeah, and I can say this now that she's no longer with us, but she even made a couple of statements about how she hoped somebody would assassinate him or shoot him or something. I would tell, you know, I would rebut that with, well, then he'd just be a martyr. And don't say that aloud, because the Secret Service or the FBI or somebody will be showing up here looking for you.
No, you're a black woman saying stuff like that, you're going to get thrown into jail.
Right, right, right.
But it was so funny because her older sister was sitting by you a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
She,
or last week even. Yeah, right.
No, but it was when she said the treason line, he should be shot for treason.
Yeah, right. Like, exactly.
Okay, right. The views and opinions. Yeah. It was classic.
Oh, exactly. No, because that is the opinion of black women. I mean, that's how much they hate Trump. That, you know, they sooner that he be gone completely. Not every black woman, obviously, but his strongest, greatest opponents are black women.
Yeah. Yeah. And if this country and democracy in this country is going to be saved, once again, it'll be black women who do the saving.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, every election since Trump was elected in 2016, it's been that way, Monroe. Every single election. And yeah, you're absolutely correct. They see through Trump.
Right. You know, and he doesn't like them, except for Omarosa.
He cut her free. Trump. Okay. This is Trump doesn't like. Trump likes one person.
Right.
Trump.
Right.
Okay. Everybody else is some people he uses.
Well, he likes his daughter a little bit.
Which one?
Not Marla Maples' daughter, not that one.
He's about to name, he wants one to be the head of the Republican National Committee. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
It's just turning the Republican Party into the Trump Party, literally turning it into the Trump Party. Those dummies are just going off a cliff for him.
The Trump mom and pop store.
It's a mom and pop store. Absolutely ridiculous. And I'll give you an example. Joyce would love this. So there was a special election in New York yesterday. I'll probably be talking about it more tomorrow with my guest Denali, who is from New York. And I was following. I don't know if you were following him much. It was the seat vacated when the Congress booted George Santos from the House for all his lying and deceit and cheating and thievery of sorts. What a lunatic he was.
Trump Jr. Trump,
yeah. It's funny, they pick on Santos, but they worship Trump. I can't figure that one out. Republicans, man, are inconsistent. So in that election, it was a really centrist, to put it mildly, former congressman named Tom Suozzi, and he was up against a woman named Mazi Phillip. Monroe, we haven't talked about this election. I don't think you and I followed it because I was getting Mazi's emails, fundraising solicitation emails all the time. As you know, I still not removed from those lists. I just get bombarded with them.
Keep sending them money. If you cut the checkbook off, they won't email you anymore.
Yeah, I know, but I kind of want to. I know I'm a walking contradiction. I complain about it, and yet I keep them on just to see what they're saying. I realize there's a. You know who would point that out, Joyce? Ben, you're inconsistent. You know, Ben, you can get rid of those emails. You know that, don't you? Yeah, I know.
I keep them too. You need to know your enemies.
Yes. So follow me on this, ladies and gentlemen. Mazi Phillip is Ethiopian born. She's Jewish. And she migrated to Israel. And then she left Israel and came to the United States. And now she's running as hardcore MAGA. Rand. Well, this is only a special election to fill out the term. There's another one in November. Yeah. So I presume she'll be the nominee.
Well, he beat her so bad, she'd be crazy. He beat her by 40 points or something.
No, it was closer. Yeah. 40 points? I think it was 56. This could be one of our favorite famous bets, which you owe me so many bucks.
I'm not going to bet you on that. It was huge. It was a landslide.
Well, for Trump, biggest landslide ever, 54. Actually, it's more. You're right. You're absolutely correct. I mean, 54 to 46 is more than Donald Trump has ever won an election. In fact, Donald Trump has never won an election. Let's just pause and think about that, MAGA. Never, ever.
He won polls.
He won polls, yeah. Well, that doesn't count as an election. Right. It's not. But anyway, so twisted and bizarre. She was an immigrant to two countries, Israel and then the United States. And she proudly proclaims that she is the embodiment of the recipient of the American dream. But her campaign was so hate-filled toward immigrants as she was trying to tap MAGA's hatred for people who are trying to get into this country. A very bizarre hatred, Monroe, because today's Valentine's Day, and Donald Trump sent out a Valentine to his beloved Melania. Do you see this? She's an immigrant. Okay.
No.
Oh, this party is so freaking weird.
What did the Valentine say?
You know what? I'm sure it was really a Valentine's to Melania that was more or less a fundraising appeal.
And to him mostly. Yeah, right.
You want me to call it? Hold on. See if I still have it. Oh, let's see. Hold on. Here it is.
She probably said something to the thing is, you're so wonderful for loving me.
Yeah, that sounds like, wait, hold on. Where is it? I can't find it now. I'll find it eventually. But anyway, so this gets my point being, as soon as that election was over and she had lost, Trump started bad-mouthing her. It's so classic Trump, you know, because he wanted to distance himself.
From a loser.
From a loser, even though he's a loser.
Right, exactly. Right.
Yeah, and so he just started trashing her and like, man, this dude is like a really diseased individual. But that's, you know, this is what gets to what you're saying. She's a black woman who joined Trump's crusade, joined Trump's movement, embraced the MAGA. And then as soon as she lost, MAGA cut her loose.
Right.
Kind of symbolic of so many things, Monroe, particularly the contempt. Well, the contempt MAGA has for black women,
right,
is on display there. Anyway, like I said, I'll be talking about that race further tomorrow. But you must have some general thoughts about it, Monroe. The significance of it, what it meant that the Democrats won the swing.
The significance of it is Sousa. Am I pronouncing his name right? I think it's Sousa.
Yeah.
But anyway. He did what Biden needs to do and every other Democratic candidate is he looked straight into the camera, said they're lying, and then made the counter argument with a you know me and you know that this is not true. What he did was what Bobby Kennedy told Democrats to do back in the 60s. And that's hang a lantern on your shortcomings, on your faults, and deal with them. And that takes your opponents, the opportunity away from your opponents to use it as a weapon against you, because you've already told them about you. You've pointed it out. You've addressed it. And so when your opponent tries to recycle it, it doesn't ring as important.
Yeah. No, I know what you're saying. Listen.
And the Democrats, let me further that. So the Democrats with Biden, with his age, ought to say, I'm 81. And as an 81-year-old man, you're going to see me stumble sometimes. You're going to see me misspeak sometimes, but I know what I'm doing. I've done this and I've done that. I'm the best president since FDR when it comes to getting things done.
Monroe, you were preaching to the choir. You embrace who you are,
right,
to a certain degree. That's who you are. You don't pretend you're something other than what you are. You know,
from it or hide from it.
Yeah, and
I think that's his handlers doing that. You know, because Biden is over the years has been a pretty regular guy and embraced it, what he was.
Well, national Democrats in general, this goes back to Clinton, and they create this fiction, and they live within this fictitious shell, and they try to create like this phony image in which they're appealing like to the notion that of what they expect people to see in a president and Obama did the same thing. Monroe, Obama was like, just think about Obama's whole appeal. You know, there are no divisions in America. We're a country that's completely united, even as though the divisions are right in his face. You know, there's no red America, there's no blue America. Clinton would be upholding this view of him as a family man and a loving husband while he was having an affair in the White House. Now, I know your interpretation of it was that it was not an affair.
That's not my interpretation. I'm quoting. Don't be prescribing. Don't be assigning that to me. It's a saying.
I just teased.
I heard that it was a saying in the South.
I've never in the South, it. Yeah.
In the South. But I heard that the saying was, if it's just eating, it ain't cheating. And obviously, it was so incredible that it stuck in my mind.
You know, it is amazing. And you know what? It's so classic that it would be applied to Clinton, because I could hear Clinton saying it. You know how Clinton, well, it depends on what it is. He was so slick. He would
And he may have presented it, for all I know, to others.
Yes.
That's how I pointed out. It may not even exist there. It may be a Clinton-esque.
Clinton-esque? What are you talking about, guys? I didn't go to Final Mile. So that points out what I'm talking about. There's a phoniness to it, you know, and I wish that Joe Biden would blow it up and just be real good. He goes, guys, I'm 81. I have a lifelong stutterer. It's hard enough for me to get a sentence out. But now when I'm 81, it's even harder.
Right.
But I'm better than this bum. Me on my worst day is better than this bum.
Yeah, I think what he ought to do, Biden, is challenge Trump to a debate right now. On one topic, you know, the Gaza Strip or the Ukraine or the border, because Trump talks in sound bites and they make no sense, or when they do make sense, they're anti-American. You know, for example, with his saying that if the allies weren't paying enough money, then he would encourage Russia to attack them. I mean, that thing was so loaded with lies, because the way NATO works is it's not a country club like Mar-a-Lago where you put up your dues and you get to come and hang around. It's the agreement they have is that each country would would put up X amount of money in defense with soldiers and materials, war materials, et cetera, so that if we had to fight Russia, they would be fully equipped to do it. But we aren't sending tax dollars over to Germany saying, well, Germany's not sending money to us, mm-hmm. or putting it in NATO, saying, well, here's $1 trillion. If we get in a war, you spend it as you wish.
Yeah. I listen, man, that thing is so weird. That riff from Trump was so filled with contradictions embedded in it.
Any other president but him, it would be the biggest story of the month. I mean, the media would get a hold of that and take it every which way.
Yeah.
But because Trump says crazy shit every day, then it's just one more crazy thing that he said.
Wow. Well, it kind of blows up a myth, though. And we're tying the two points together here. So the Democrats abide by these myths. And there's this myth that that our security is guaranteed by the NATO alliance. And there's this notion that we're saving the world from a catastrophe, a continuation, let's say, of World War II. And that's the myth of NATO going back to the post-war years in the 1940s. And I don't think most Americans agree with that, but that's the myth that we've been asked to swear by.
I don't think they care, most Americans. Right. I don't think it's not an agreement. I don't think, you know, the World War II was nearly 80 years ago now. So that's like having a Civil War argument as far as most people are concerned.
And so, so this myth was the anti-communist myth that the United States security was being threatened by this global machine of communism and that we had to stand up to it. And this was the myth that Republican Party embraced for our entire lives, Monroe.
And promoted. Until last year before.
Yeah, until Donald Trump took office.
Yeah, right.
And now all of a sudden he's saying things that only lefties would say. You know, a variation of only things that lefties
would even say that it's okay for Putin to blow up the rest of Europe. I mean, they wouldn't go that far.
Okay, so far left.
Except for your car-carrying communists, of course. But,
well,
and I don't even think they say that.
Okay, the far left.
Yeah.
Has the notion that Putin has been an exaggerated caricature that's been used by the Democratic Party to justify the war machine. And that's a belief they don't run away from it. And Trump sort of supports that in a weird way by his adoration for Putin, who, listen, I mean, anybody who adores Putin, that's pretty strange. I understand lefties hating the foreign policy pursuits of the United States and the military industrial complex and all the money we spend on arms. I totally get that. But to embrace Putin and try to make him seem like a lovable character of some sorts, that's some twisted, weird fantasy. Just hatred of him. Taking it too far, in my humble opinion. But, you know, I don't think most Americans care, Monroe. I actually don't think most Americans care if NATO were to fall.
Right, because they don't understand their importance. And nobody cared about NATO until what, 9 years ago?
With Trump?
No, when Putin invaded the Ukraine.
Oh, I see. Oh, yeah, the first.
And they're like, whoa, wait a minute. What's happening here?
So here's the weird thing about Trump. It's like what he just said. It's so bizarre. He's like, yeah, if they don't contribute money to NATO, as inaccurate as that statement is, but if they don't contribute money to NATO, kick them out, invade them. I'm like, the whole point of the whole point of NATO is to protect them from invasion. Okay. So I mean, it just, it makes no sense. It's like,
I don't know what he's talking about. That's right. You know, he's consistently confused. And this is another example of it. Again, he doesn't understand that we're not sending money to Germany or NATO. We're requiring NATO members to put up their fair share of the defense.
What he's ultimately saying is that he doesn't care if Russia invades countries, nearby countries, and absorbs them.
Oh, yeah,
doesn't care about that. Yeah, if you don't care about that, just get rid of NATO. Pull yourself out of NATO.
That's right. No, that was another Russia, are you listening?
Yeah.
You know, like when he was telling the Proud Boys it was okay to attack the Capitol.
Yeah.
With this statement that he made, he was telling his puppeteer, Putin, that it's okay with him if he becomes president for Putin, Russia, to expand his boundaries and gobble up all these small satellite countries, former satellite countries, because Putin wants to rebuild the Russian Empire, the Soviet Union.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. But many messages that were sent out there, even if they were all contradictory, the notion that the United States would remain in NATO, but these other states could be overtaken by Russia. He's filled with contradictions. All right, I got to ask you this about this, Monroe. We have not talked about this on the mic. I don't know if you and I have even had a conversation about this privately on the phone. There's just been so much other stuff going on. But this ongoing matter in Georgia of a quote-unquote conflict of interest between Prosecutor Fannie Willis and another prosecutor that she named to prosecute Trump. What's his name? Nathan Wade. I think his name, I'm doing this off the top of my head. Very bizarre. MAGA, one of the defendants, Trump's co-defendants down there, seized on this, and MAGA has embraced it. And somehow or other, because one prosecutor had an affair with another prosecutor or was romantically involved with another prosecutor, that's a conflict of interest. I'm like, how is that a conflict of interest? Like, isn't that like a theme in every single TV show, a crimes TV show? You know, I'm thinking of The Wire, where the prosecutor is having an affair with the cop. You know, it's like after a long, hard day of work, the two prosecutors start making out on the couch. I mean,
most romances spring forth from the job. Yeah, you know, if you work hard and the only place you're working is in the Sun-Times newsroom, then chances are you're going to be having an affair with a Sun-Times colleague.
Yeah,
you're not going to meet somebody on the street and then suddenly say, "Why don't we knock boots?" But you know, the thing is, isn't it rich?
Yes, go ahead.
Isn't it rich that the man who had an affair with a porn star and a Playboy is not held for that. It's like, boys will be boys.
Yeah.
But then because a prosecutor, a prosecutor who's prosecuting Trump, by the way.
Yeah.
Needs to be replaced because it's a conflict of interest.
Yeah. No, it's so rich. I hadn't thought where you were going. I thought you were going this way. Somehow or other, that is a conflict of interest. They're both on the same side. A conflict of interest is when you're having an affair with someone on the other side. So, you get what I'm saying? So
right.
The prosecutor was having an affair with Melania Trump.
I think he was still married. He's about to get divorced. And so from his wife's point of view, it might have been a conflict of interest.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a whole other.
But it's not a legal conflict of interest. It's not a public conflict of interest.
Now, I'll give you a conflict of interest. Clarence Thomas being married to one of the instigators, one of the leaders of the election was stolen movement.
Right.
While he's going to rule on whether Donald Trump committed an act of insurrection.
But that doesn't count because they never talk to each other.
Oh, right. I forgot. Yeah.
So he probably doesn't even know.
Yeah, he doesn't know.
And she was out there on January 6th rooting for the other team.
Wow. Sending text messages to Mark Meadows in the White House. Right. Unbelievable. And that's not a conflict. He's going to vote on it. Well, I mean, it won't matter because it looks like they're gearing up, as we all know, to keep Trump on the ballot because they're afraid of taking a bold stand, even if it's the right thing. They know it's the right thing.
Well, it's the law. It's the right thing. It's the law. The wording couldn't be any more plain than it is on the 14th Amendment.
No.
It's the law, but what they're trying to do is they're pulling a Clinton. Court said, what would Bill Clinton say about this?
You are so right. They're pulling a Bill Clinton. That's exactly what they're doing. Absolutely. They're speaking in circles to remove themselves from the reality of what's going down. The law says you can't be, the Constitution says you can't run for president if you're an insurrectionist. And
we don't want to create chaos.
Yeah.
In Trump age. And if we say that Colorado is right, then Alabama is sure to run a campaign to take Biden off the ticket.
You know what? That's the absurdity. So right now, they got the impeachment. They finally got their act together and voted to impeach Mayorkas, the Homeland Security. And so it's like proving, see, you went after Trump. Now we're going after Mayorkas. And so, all right, well, see what you got. Let's see your evidence. So here's the same thing. We all saw the Trump-led insurrection.
Right.
Okay, so we understand why Colorado is moving to boot him, and Illinois is too. Alabama, what do you got against Biden? Let's see your evidence. Do you follow what I'm saying? Like, they keep going, oh, well, Alabama. Well,
against Mallorca, except they don't like his policies.
They're going against Mayorkas because they want to convey the message that everybody does it.
And that it's not a big deal.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. Like, the Dems, they said Trump did this, that, and the other thing. Look what Mayorkas did. And, you know, 99%, like you said, 90%, most people aren't paying attention. And so they're hoping to, they all do it, that attitude. I'm voting for Trump because whatever whacked out reason someone has for voting for Trump. The stock market was great under Trump. And like,
right. Which is what Democrats need to do is just tell the truth.
Yeah.
And I don't mean tell the truth and not lie. I mean, to say what the Republicans are doing and why they're doing it and why it's not the truth. Mm. But every Democrat, whatever TV show they're on, wherever they are speaking, they ought to point out that the reason we have a border crisis is because the Republicans want an issue. They don't have any solutions to anything. So what they want to do is just have problems that they can lie about that they can fix.
Yeah, that is amen. And that border crisis, wow. We'll be talking about that tomorrow at a greater length. But yeah, Monroe, when Denali comes on, but that so-called border crisis, and that I mean, gotta tip my hat to the Republicans, to MAGA. They have brainwashed the hell out of this country. Even people here in the city of Chicago, supposedly a liberal city. Of course, we all know that there's so much hate in this city, but they've just bought into it, hook, line, and sinker, that it's a crisis, even though immigrants fortify our economy in so many ways, and that we need new people in this country. But they've somehow or other turned it into a crisis. Even you got Democrats, centrist Democrats in New York, running and winning on saying they're going to be tougher on the border than the Republicans. So that's when you know, Monroe, that you've successfully gaslit the country, when people start following. And by the way, Republicans will flip. Remember the Republican, we were talking about how Republicans gaslit America on the threat of the Soviet Union and then threw it away, you know, right. What I mean? Throughout the threat. I can't imagine a world right now where MAGA throws away the border crisis as an issue. Oh, no, wait. As soon as I said this, didn't they vote against the bailout bill for the border crisis last week, Monroe?
They did. Yeah. Because, and the reason they did it, they said, is because it's not strong enough. And this bill gave them everything they've been asking for 20 years.
Yeah.
And Democrats gave up a lot to just get to just settle the issue. And,
no,
then,
they...
Trump Trump comes along and says, whoa, no, not yet. I'll fix this once I'm elected president.
Yeah.
Only I can do it.
That's the reason they voted against it.
Exactly.
Right there. Right. They didn't want that to be used in a Biden commercial.
Right.
Which doesn't matter anyway, MAGA. You're going to get Alabama and you're going to lose California no matter what. Okay. Right. So, you know, I guess they're worried about the old suburban swing voter in Tucson or Milwaukee. Yeah,
and the problem with that, with them counting on the changing, getting the suburban swing voter to vote for them, is they have this whole, father knows best image of suburbanites is the white people where the family sits down for dinner and the father's in charge, right? The white father's in charge and the white family, and the wife is at home in a sundress or something waiting on father to come home so she can serve him a martini as he walks in the door. The suburbs, the demographics have changed. Asians in the suburbs. There are divorced women in the suburbs. There are gay people in the suburbs. There are Black people in the suburbs. The people that they attack the most, there's a lot of them in the suburbs. And there are not that many father know best voters there anymore.
That was a great riff. And there's also people who want abortion rights in the suburbs. Let's not forget that that group. I think most of them are that group.
Right.
That's why you've been predicting all along that Donnie won't get reelected. And, polls seem to be stacked against Biden. But if I were a gambling man, I would put than that.
Yeah, the polls are, but we're not, we have a few months to go yet.
Yeah.
And a few elections and a few trials. I mean, it's a whole lot going on that Trump should not be happy about.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, the Democrats are just warming up their war machine. And they have so much ammunition to use. They could just use Trump's words in their ads, and when people are paying attention, they're gonna go, "Holy shit!" For example, his talking about how his economy, they believe that his economy was better than Biden's, and it's not. The stock market hit record highs last week.
Yeah.
Highs, so much so that they're higher than they were 2 years ago. When who was president 2 years ago?
Oh, yeah. It's all just a bunch of BS, Monroe. It's just absolute. When I think about like judging the economy, judging the performance of a president by the stock market. And that's just talk about gaslit. That's fixing people's brains. So that Donald Trump going around.
Except for the retirement accounts, where the IRAs and what have you, where they show up, how their retirement accounts are doing. I mean, that's important to people. And so this is what the Republicans choose.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's important to people. But the notion that it's somehow or other one president has.
Oh, yeah, right.
Contributed to a rise in the stock market more than another president is absolute lunacy.
But every president, when the stock market is flying high, takes credit for it.
Really. Oh, yeah, no. I mean, everybody does it. Yeah, absolutely. Everyone does it. Doesn't mean it's logical.
Right.
The Democrats play into this stuff, too. So that's why half the time I'm yelling at Democrats. But you're absolutely correct.
You know, it's like with gas, the gasoline. It's when gasoline is high.
Yes.
And it's the whoever the president shushes it and says, it's not that important. And when the prices are low, well, because of my policy.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Stock markets had ups and downs throughout the administrations of Republicans and Democrats. If you were like a serious student of economics, you could chart maybe what possible connections there were between the policies of an administration and the stock market. Then you could probably see that, hey, guess what? It goes up and it goes down. And, right. Administrations come and go.
Right.
But you're absolutely right. Now,
the reality is that the economy is doing great, especially because we were coming out of a 100-year pandemic. And, and people are factoring that in that but what Democrats ought to be doing, Democratic politicians all over the country, is telling folks time and time again that Biden is a great president. Not that he died, but that he is a great president because, in fact, his accomplishments have been just that great.
That's running so against the tide of how Biden is presented.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
It's right. Now, the polls say that Trump was better for the economy than Biden, which is not true. Yeah. Trump is better for defense than Biden. All of it's just the opposite of what it should be. But if you have Democrats saying, okay, this is what you're told, this is the reality.
Yeah.
The Republicans are telling you this is a reality, but they just have to, that has to be their basis from now till October.
All right. There are a couple other things I want to talk about, but we run out of time. So we're going to have to save the Kennedys till next time. The commercial for baby Bobby Kennedy was so over the top. I don't know if you saw that during the Super Bowl. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if you got a chance to watch the full Super Bowl. Anyway, but we'll save that for the next time. Take a deeper dive on that and other issues. We've run out of time. So, Monroe, thank you very much for coming on the show. Shout out to the great Joyce Owens. And
I plan to somehow, some way, get people to realize what an incredible artist, a great artist she was. We'll see how I pull it off. And it's not hard work, it's just work.
Work. Absolutely. It's not hard work, it's just work.
Right.
That is true, because if you see her work, you'll realize how talented and brilliant she was as an artist. It's not hard work, it's just work. A work of love, I might add. All right, that's Monroe Anderson. Thank you very much. Also want to thank producer Chris. He does a great job. Hey, producer Chris, give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash. Peace and love, everybody.
And remember, you can always catch previous Ben Jarofsky shows, get Benny J bonus interviews, read columns from Ben Jarofsky, read columns from other great Chicago Reader writers, all at chicagoreader.com. You can follow Ben on Instagram at Benny J Show. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow The Ben Jarofsky Show on your favorite streaming and podcasting platforms.